In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my little mutie, my toad, my nightcrawler, my homo superiosis. What is it? Homo sapien superior? That's it. That's my dude. You know him. You love him. The one and the only.
Come to me, my podcasters. I mean X-Men. I mean Josh. I mean Andrea. Dang it! Travis Rat's here.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I delve deep into graphic novels and trades, or what's going on in the nerd world. You, my friends, are on a comic book club episode. It's like Oprah's book club, which is a bad reference because Oprah doesn't do a book club or anything, but it's like a book club, except you're not invited to discuss it. You just listen to it, and maybe you know what we're reading, maybe you don't. I don't know. At this point, we just read what we want and we talk about it. That's the show that you're listening to. Last episode, we had Andrea
previously on the podcast.
We had Andrea on the show. Say hi, Andrea.
Hi.
And we talked about the original X-Men cartoon and the new X-Men 97 cartoon on Disney Plus. Had a little conversation about those episodes. And we thought, you know what would be a good idea? You know what would be just wonderful? The name of the show being Comic Exposure. We would expose Andrea to some X-Men comics. And Travis on the show, Travis, what was the initial book you thought about having us read?
Inferno. That was the Goblin Queen Madeline Pryor one.
Yeah, and then we found out it was how many pages?
A gazillion. And also very early 90s, or very, like, I don't even know if it's early 90s or late 80s comics. And I dipped into it.
Yeah.
And it was, if you found this at all confusing, Inferno is 100 times more.
And 500 pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
like
long.
we did Blood of the Virgin, and that was pretty hefty. I can't imagine.
Yeah,
I can't imagine doing like a superhero comic that's that.
So
my God,
it's a lot.
We punted. Travis and I were hunting for books, and I thought, you know what, I've never read, but is sort of supposed to be a quintessential sort of like changing of the X-Men, is when Grant Morrison comes on. Gives them all leather jackets. Frank quietly draws it, and we get new X-Men.
Yeah, because you know what? You know what provides clarity to comics? Grant Morrison and Frank quietly.
Nothing provides more clarity than Grant Morrison. So we decided to throw this at Andrea and have her read it. And Andrea, tell me if I'm wrong. Is this the first superhero comic you've ever read or ever read for the show?
Not the first one I've ever read, because the first comic I ever read in like period end of sentence, it was the Death of Superman, like everybody else that you've ever had on the show. But this is my first being on the show with you guys. This is my first superhero comic to.
And is it the first one you've read in a while?
Yeah. Oh, like, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like indie comic girl all the way.
Is it your sexiest mainstream comic that you've read?
Oh, yeah. I mean, horny X-Men, I'm here for it. 100%.
Also, guys, I don't know if you're keeping up with the X-Men cartoon we talked about 2 weeks ago. Very timely.
I have not.
What?
I haven't watched it yet.
Guys, it's what we're talking about today.
No.
It is what we're talking about today.
All right,
today.
We should just watch it right now.
They are in more.
Everybody can listen to us watch it.
Previously, a minute ago on the podcast, everything was going fine. Until Travis realized they had not watched the latest episode, which involves a major plot line from the book we're going to talk about today.
No. Well,
then my soul will be... Here's what I've seen. I have seen many reels on Instagram of people like pretending to cry or showing people cry and having it say like after watching episode 5 of X-Men 97.
Oh,
like,
just, yeah. They make some... It's not beat for beat. But there's a main thing, and there's some visual images, and there's some story beats that are exactly from what we're going to today.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
So, then it's timely that we're talking about this book. So, So I want to, Travis, since you and I have read more superhero comics than Andrew, I want to ask you first, like, had you ever read this before? Was this something that was on your radar when it came out?
Excellent question, Josh.
Yeah.
I'm going to ponder for a second. Actually, this is
what they pay me the big money for on this podcast.
It's kind of we started this podcast because Josh and I realized in a break room one day that we both read comics as teenagers and then stopped reading them and we're kind of dipping our toes back into them. So we're like, well, I wonder what people who have not read comics think about comic books. Let's start a podcast. This is where I had just jumped off X-Men on the previous run as a teenager from Grant Morrison.
Okay.
The movies had come out. They were doing this long run. It was like with like Marrow and a bunch of people in there. And I was just of that age where I was like, I can't be reading comics anymore. And so I'd stop. But every now and then I would go into the bookstore and I'd see an X-Men comic book. So I'd pick up one, like a loose one, to see if I'm like, am I missing something? You know, like a little sneak a hit, you know, like a little heroin addict. And so I had bought a couple of these because they branded it. It was like new X-Men. It was a whole new X-Men run. I remember reading Wizard and they were like, because I'd still snag a Wizard every now and then, you know?
Yeah.
You got to. And it was like this big deal that Grant Morrison was taking over the X-Men. So I tried reading it and I was like, ugh, this is the worst. This is the worst. Like, they make them look like the movie X-Men with like this weird thing. And what's this art? I didn't even know the term house style at the time, but I was like, what's with this art? I don't like it. And now, guys, I really enjoyed this book. I read both volumes, Teacher's Pet. Whoa.
No, there you go. You got it. You got ahead of us. I'd never read this. This was my time away from comics. And I had never thought about going back to read it. I see it always when you're thinking of like important runs and runs to do all that stuff. I expected this to be far more of a reboot than it was. Yeah. And so that's kind of what I want to start with. It's not a reboot, but it's like picking up some old storylines, but kind of changing things, which is, Andrea, how I want to first apologize that this is the book that, not that it's bad, but that it's, man, there's just a lot of stuff thrown at you.
Well, I'm gonna just say out the gate, I friggin' loved it.
Okay, that's
like,
good.
So
that's
much.
Because this is the most, this is the most in medias res, what the hell is going on book.
And I can
disagree,
totally,
but go ahead.
See that.
Okay.
Well, I can see how people would think that. I know that I am going into this being like, who's this guy? What's this guy? What's going on here? Da, da, da. Like, there's a lot of unknowns in this going into it. But at the same time, I didn't feel super lost.
That's good.
Which was great. But yeah, oh man, is there a lot to this?
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. So, Travis, I don't know that it's, how would you, if you were to pitch what this run starts as, how would you summarize what we just read? If you could, like, a quick, what's the story beats do you think are important in this volume?
Yeah, I think you're right in the sense that they do reference things in the past canon offhandedly, but there is no, like, see issue 32 for of X-Men.
Right, no, there's none of that.
But it is basically, it is a paring down of the X-Men. At the X-Men at this point, and maybe one of the reasons I stopped reading is, before this run, the X-Men squad was just, it was so inflated, gigantic. Yeah. So Grant Morrison comes in, he basically streamlines it down to like five core X-Men, right? And help me out here, guys. You got Beast, you got Wolverine, you got Cyclops, you got Jean Grey. You got Professor Xavier.
Emma Frost.
Right? Yeah. So we got like basically six X-Men. And then what's great about it is you have the six core, and then you have dozens of new ones because it is a school. So even Andrea, like, you know, even coming into it, you know the concept of X-Men. It's a school for mutants, and so I feel that this Grant Morrison's run, especially here, one of the story beats is really focusing on it being a school in a way we've never seen before and previously. It always seemed like a super ops team, And now it's like, yeah, there's classrooms and stuff like that. So the pacing on this thing is real quick for a comic. So major events happen very quickly, which is a bit jarring, but I really like. So within like the first, I think it's the first issue of this volume or the second issue, there's this big catastrophic event out of nowhere where 16 million mutants die. And Josh, this is getting to your question about summarize it. So in the first issues of this book, Genosha Sentinels, which have kind of evolved and become wild Sentinels, attack Genosha and are able to kill 16 million mutants. So it's this huge catastrophic event, which the time period this book comes around is really weird too. And so the volume and Grant Morrison's run, a lot of that is dealing with the fallout of this, you know, culling of mutants and what that brings about. It brings about a couple of things. It brings about obviously the demise of a lot of mutants and in some ways mutants that major mutants that we love. Two, it brings about what's called a second mutations. Some mutants like Emma Frost and Beast are developing second mutations on there. And give me a third one, guys. I feel like that's a rule of threes.
I think the thing that happens in it is sort of the struggle over this. So we've got Cassandra Nova, the big bad, and the struggle for Charles's brain, right?
Yeah.
So Professor X's mind. So you have that as kind of what happens at the end of volume one as we find out that.
Well, it's in the introduction of Cerebra, the sister to Cerebro,
the giant
is
Cerebra.
Showing how, well, this like amplifies his mental power, his psychic power even more. And so Cassandra Nova's like, hey, give me a piece of that.
Well, there's really this tremendous thing about nerd culture too, in the sense that you have, X-Men is always about their juxtaposition against humanity, like how humanity feels about mutants at the time. And it goes from we absolutely hate them, you know, we're hunting them down, to we love them, right? And we're in a stage now, as Grant Morrison opens up this book, where mutants are becoming popular in the zeitgeist. People want to be mutants. And one of the major storylines in here as well is, humans. He's an Ubermensch.
Like but that's what it is.
It's like, on human. There's a group called human who are they're humans, but they want to be mutants. So they are harvesting mutant body parts that have powers and putting them into themselves. And that's a major element in this first book. And
So. There is when you say there's a lot going on, there's a lot going on. Grant Morrison is a writer who is very like, he loves comic books and loves sort of the lore and all the things that you do and just dissecting sort of like the weirdness of comics. He embraces the strangeness of comic books whenever he writes anything. So he writes Animal Man and really does like the, hey, you want to do some weird crap? Here we go. I'm writing Animal Man, right? Like whenever he takes over a book, he does very like, wild stuff,
and he's taken over all the major characters, you know, at some point. Andrew, if you haven't listened to a Grant Morrison interview, you gotta do it. One, he's like Scottish, right? So you have that accent.
Okay.
Or like English, something like that, but I think it's a Scottish brogue. And two, he talks about everything metaphysically. So everything is like yeah, well, the X-Men, like they come in here, and it's about like youth and like the youth revolt on things, and I just wanted to do something that was he's so heady about comics.
He really is, and so he writes very heady books. So what I want to talk about is so we've got this introduction to X-Men, and so Andrea, have you read an X-Men book before, or is this your first X-Men book? Okay,
no, and I feel like that's where I felt like a bit of a bonehead, like because I feel like there was something missing about Cyclops that had happened to him in a previous.
Oh, yeah. Didn't know about it either. So
he was basically possessed by Apocalypse for like a year in comics, and so Apocalypse. So we get a darker Cyclops, and this is like the current day Cyclops, and which that's kind of what he's dealing with the fallout of is being possessed by like a really evil person, and that giving him certain kind of dark desires that the Boy Scout X-Men never dealt with before and how that affects his marriage and relationships and things like that.
Okay, yeah. Got you. And then there was Emma Frost, who she was not... My scope of X-Men is fairly limited, and I knew about her, but I didn't know why she was just on Genosha and like not a part of like the like X-Men like school, Xavier's school. And then like they were kind of like, hey, you're joining us now, and she just like instantly kind of jumped in and was a part of the crew. So
yeah,
she's always
been a villain good guy, right? So she straddled that line, like being one of Magneto's like henchmeny sort of thing to like when she needs to is on that side. And so this one, she says, hey, look, the only option we're left with now is this option. So
and before
that's why Magneto was on Genosha.
And yeah. before this, Emma Frost had kind of made the transition because she was one of the head leaders. There was this comic called Generation X, which was like young mutants. It was a school for like teenage mutants. It was like basically community college for X-Men. Like Jubilee was on it, and like people like Cannonball and like weird, like it was like, as the title implies, like grungy mutants. And she was a headmaster there, and lost a bunch of students. And that was kind of where we saw her kind of start making the transition into the good guy side.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Andrew, you said you really enjoyed this. So I want to kind of dive into that with you. But just what are the things that connected with you that you really were like, okay, I having not read this before, having this not been your normal read, what were the things that really connected with you? What were the things that you really liked about this volume?
I really like this guy's writing. And like, I kind of jumped on like, who is this guy? And like, it is, man, is he polarizing with a lot of readers with his stories. But I really liked the writing. I just thought it was, the story was, there were so many like little B plots going on in there between the characters. And it was so character driven. Like there were some fights, but they were like a page. It wasn't like this big sweeping battle all the time, which honestly, that's like what keeps me away from superhero comics is like, that's like a snooze fest for me. Like, it's like Marvel movies, like where you have this huge battle and it goes on forever. I'm like, I don't care. So this just felt like we were just really in it with the characters. I loved the focus on Beast and like how instead of, and this whole evolution of these, like the new mutations that were happening and like, he's turning more and more of a beast and it's affecting his whole life. And he's really sad because he wants to date this girl and she's embarrassed because she's a reporter and they're like talking about smack about them. And it's just like, I felt like way more connected to the characters in this one. There was a lot of, I love like quiet moments between characters where it's just conversation. And there was a lot of that in this. And I that made me feel way more connected to the story. And I thought it was really interesting. Cassandra Nova, full disclosure, thought it was a dude until she was like, I'm a lady.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a woman.
And that's, and that's part of like Frank quietly draws most of this. He doesn't do the annual. He doesn't do the last issue. I don't think he does 17.
That was a big issue for Grant Morrison's run, is quietly was always getting replaced by other people.
And quietly is a slow artist, right? He notoriously does not finish projects. If he's on a project, it takes a really long time for it to come out, right?
He has to work quietly, and there's just so much noise in the world.
But his art is so unique and so different and so weird.
I liked it, but I just, did he also draw Emma Frost? Because I'm like,
there are
this old woman looks like Professor X, and I understand why, because that is revealed. But then it's Emma Frost, and it's just like she's just tits and legs.
Well, so, if you look at the beginning,
he has like two art styles. It's like ugly people and like boobs. But even his drawings of like, it's not as though his drawings of Jean Grey or Emma Frost are attractive facially, right? He doesn't do pretty faces.
No,
but you put long hair and an X-shaped thing on it, and like, okay,
what
you
is
know
this, lady. Glendale? Am I right, people?
That cat. So when we talk about like the the character beats and the character moments, I would totally agree with you. There, those are aplenty in there, whether that's, you know, Jean Grey and Wolverine having that moment, whether that's
Beast. That got me real excited.
That big long scene with Beast and Xavier talking about, you know, Charles Xavier talking about sort of like when he finds out that it's not Charles, right? And he goes, oh, yes, my God, you're Cassandra Nova, right?
Oh, man.
You're controlling your mind. Beaten to death with a beak and a baseball bat, which sounds like a, rancid song.
But you have all these, I would agree with you. That's the thing that really drives this story are all those character moments. And the sort of fighting scenes are
real secondary.
They're very secondary. They're not all over the place. They're short. It's kind of like, okay, we killed these giant, you know, we killed these giant sentinels. Okay, let's talk. You know, we're fighting some people. Okay, let's talk. I think what this allows Frank quietly to do is just draw some really ugly mutants, right? Like the dude with the three faces.
And I'm sorry. The beak was giving me like nightmares.
That's not quietly though. Quietly doesn't draw that one. That's a different artist, but that is very, that's a very gross, like, it looked like, that looked very Vertigo, Travis. That last, those last books were very like, is this like the, what's the guy who did all the books for Preacher? Who's the artist on Preacher? No, the artist. that's what it reminded me of was, but that's what it reminded me of is a very like, Grant Morrison was like, oh, I'm not getting a house guy. I'm getting someone who looks like he drew Vertigo comics in the 90s. That's who's going to draw these X-Men
the
books.
The gore, and especially with like the jaws and the
man. Yeah, they're just ugly, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I think you're right. So like, we kind of gave our opening, we're past opening salvos at this point, but Josh, like in general,
Steve Dillon.
Yeah.
There we go.
The late, great Steve Dillon. Steve Dillon. So Josh, what did you think? Cause this is an X-Men book that it's not the first X-Men book, but an X-Men run by a major writer that isn't house style on there.
Yeah.
Which I don't think this style is your particular style, but yet it is something different, and I know you appreciate those different...
I like weird, right? Yeah. So I'm a fan of weird. I like Quietly. Quietly does weird stuff. So All-Star Superman is like the quintessential Frank Quietly book. I love it. It's weird. It's, you know, it's Grant Morrison and Quietly. It's bizarre. That's what this is to me. I can see why if you were an X-Men fan and you were reading it, this would have been something that you would have been like, oh, dude, I don't know about this, right? Mm. I can see the polarizing nature of this book, right? I can get that. But I enjoyed it. I think there's a part of me, you know, Travis and I, we both have Kindle Unlimited. So instead of getting book one, you can get, or instead of getting volume one, you can get book one for free, which is essentially the first two volumes crammed together, right? So I started flipping past it, but not reading past it. And at that point, I was like, oh, I can get the gist of the book just by looking at it. I don't have to read it. And I like go like, am I going to read the next one? I don't know, right? Does that make sense? I enjoyed it. It was an interesting read. Yeah, it's a take. But I don't know that I need to finish Grant Morrison's take on the X-Men, right? Like, I enjoyed it. It was good. I think I really did like the character moments. I do like the idea of, like, let's play with new characters and let's Grant Morrison be like, what's a weird mutant we can do?
Yeah.
Right? Let's do that. How can we make Sentinels weirder? I feel like that's what Grant Morrison does, is Grant Morrison takes the weird of any book and, like,
let's takes put Sentinels bit, in right? their blood. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's what I really liked about it. And I feel like... there's everybody that's like traditional X-Men, however that's played out in comics, which I obviously have no idea. But I think that's, I was a little hesitant to read this one because I'm like, oh, it's going to be probably kind of boring, probably a bit of a slog, just same X-Men. And this was weird X-Men. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is giving me something to hang on to that's keeping my interest, because I'm like, oh, where is this going to go? Because this is nothing like I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And I think that's the hard part with trying to jump into an X-Men book is there's never a good place to jump into the X-Men, because there's so many X-Men And because the continuity is so convoluted and weird that even when Grant Morrison blows up an entire island of kills 16 million mutants, mm-hmm. you still have to go like, who's that one?
Yeah.
What's that one? What do you mean? Why is Cyclops keep talking about his dark possession, or like, why are they?
What's with these bugs in his dream? I don't.
Right, like all his MO, they did give him, this was right after the, like, I don't know which X-Men movie it was. I think it was the first one. He said, you have to make connections to the movie. You have to make an effort to make the X-Men more like the movie X-Men, hence the costume changes and things like that.
Yeah.
And then also bringing in that Wolverine and Jean Grey thing, there needs to be some sense of that love triangle on there. So he wasn't trapped by it, but that was something they wanted to see in the book. Can I ask you guys a question about Grant Morrison's writing? And I've always thought this. Okay, I'm not going to ask you the question.
No, you go ahead, ask it. I'm just...
Because maybe you can explain it to me.
Okay.
This happens to me all the time with reading Grant Morrison. And as an English teacher, I'm trying to figure out if it's syntax, what the syntax issue is with it. But it must be a UK thing. Did you guys have to reread Bubbles because you're like, did I skip a word? Like, what's the syntax of this? What's the arrangement of words? He arranges things in like a weird way where I'm like, this isn't traditional English. Like, it's almost like, and I think it's how he's using commas.
I think that's what it is because I had the same issue, Travis. I felt like I was like rereading things a little bit more for this one for some reason, and I like my brain wasn't computing out the
case. Well, especially like in dramaturgy and things like that, when you're looking at like how to read something out loud. Mm-hmm. If I were to try to perform the thought bubbles, I would have a real hard time on a cold read because the way that he uses internal mm-hmm. punctuation within a line, it must be UK writing. It must be like how they use the serial commas and things like that, because I have to reread Bubbles and I'm just like, I wouldn't write this. The pauses aren't in the right places.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it is, where you have those little pauses of inflection. I'm like, yeah, cold read, I'd have to really slow this down to.
I also think Grant Morrison writes a lot of bubbles, but they're brief. There's a lot of brevity in mm-hmm. what he writes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to explain a lot. And so I feel oftentimes, it's not only commas, but I feel like as I'm reading it, there's thoughts that are left out. Like, I'm explaining something to you, but I'm not explaining, like, when two characters are speaking, there's a lot that isn't written that I'm like, okay. But it feels like he's leaving out, sentences sometimes for the sake of, like, no one talks that way. But I got to get this dialogue done, right? Because I don't want a giant word balloon floating around. That's what it feels like to me sometimes with Grant, is he like writes a lot of dialogue, but it's like in Machine Gun Blast.
Right? Yeah, it's like he gives us 3/4 the story he's thinking about, and he expects us to go the rest of the
way. He's like, but you know what's underneath this, right? Like, and you're like, okay, I guess.
And I think that adds to like just his style of like, well, this is weird, right? Mm-hmm. It adds to like the weirdness of what he does and the sort of, I mean, he often talks, like you'd mentioned it before, he talks about sort of like the metatextual part of comic books. Like, this is a guy who loves comics and probably thinks that they mean more than they ever have meant, right? And so like the way he looks at past comic books and how he uses things in the past to write what he does now, I would agree with you. It feels jumpy at times, or the syntax is off. But I think that adds to like, oh, this is just weird.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like, well, what he does is weird.
It's very prescient too, in the sense of X-Men have always been like the kind of minority example and things like that. Sometimes it's straight civil rights, but this was like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And there's so much with gender and trans that are current issues. You know, as far as like how people will move in and out of that and how the public responds to that. And that whole section of the public who thinks like, no, this is like you're aligning yourself with that because it's popular right now, right? That's a thing that's coming in, that people make that anti like gender discussion because of that. And we don't have to get too deep into that, but I think it's like, I'm like, this was 24 years ago. And it feels very fresh as far as that. And you see that a lot with Morrison. I feel like, whether it be invisibles or things like that, it just feels like, obviously that stuff existed, but not on as large of a scale. And it feels like Morrison isn't going to like headlines to pull from there. He's going to, nor Zeitgeist. He's going towards, he writes to this underground current, like emotional current, that sometimes is just a real low frequency when he's writing stories, but then later comes to be, whether it be like All-Star Superman or something like that, 10 years later, you're like, oh, that undercurrent, that little minor heartbeat is now really thumping.
Well, yeah. I when I got it, I didn't pay attention to when it came out. And then when I looked back to look up Grant Morrison, I was like, when did this come out? Like, that surprised me. This felt very current, this book. I felt like it was written recently.
You could have been dropped today and be very popular. 100%. Yeah.
100%. And I think, I think it would have been popular. So
and it's also I think you need to watch the latest episode of that.
But I think that's the power of the X-Men, right? I think that's the staying power of the X-Men, but also the misunderstanding of people who want to like go like, well, the X-Men is woke. Like the X-Men has always, X-Men has always been, you know, a discussion about othering and how we treat people who are different and the struggle to be accepted. Like that's what the X-Men is about. Yeah. And so I think when you take someone like Grant, who already kind of explores different things with his writing, and then you give him the X-Men, which is the ultimate place to explore sort of politics or belonging or, you know, identity. Exclusion,
yeah.
Identity, like you give him that opportunity and he's going to write it in a way that will always feel like, I think that's the power of the X-Men, is you can write the X-Men and that story from however many years ago is going to resonate today. Cause what is humanity, if not like the struggle of acceptance and like the power of exclusion, right? Like that, that's what humanity is about. And so the X-Men lets you explore that all the time.
It's also lets you explore hormones and soap opera, which Grant doesn't put that aside. Like it's there. And in volume two, it's even more on Front Street. So if you like the soap opera nature of X-Men, then volume two is very much, we start to look at those teenage X-Men and things get weird.
I was a teenage X-Men. But I agree with you.
So the cramps.
Yeah. So, Travis, is someone who dived into Volume 2, make the pitch to Andrea and I why we should read Book 2 or Volume 2.
Well, as I just mentioned, I think it goes more into the I think it's just now like hitting middle age and teaching teenagers. The separation is growing more distinct. And in Volume 2 of Grant Morrison's run, the separation between the adult X-Men leaders and the teenage new X-Men students, because I'm not going to call them squad, because they really are written as students, becomes more distinct. And it becomes not like blind following. It becomes questioning. It becomes a clash of ideologies, and not because of politics, but because of age, right? Because of where they are and a misunderstanding of those things and where we are in those ages, which I really enjoyed that. And we start to explore, there's a lot more sexuality explored. So what I kind of wanted to ask you, I'll throw it to you guys, of the new X-Men or the new teenage X-Men, you have Angel, like the girl with the wings who vomits acid.
Yeah. That's volume two. She doesn't show up in this volume.
No,
she's not in this one.
No.
We just have.
Are you serious?
We have
really? Yeah. No, that's beak. The beginning of volume two.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
We just have the beak and then.
Okay. So that's my pitch then. You got to read volume two because you get.
Yeah.
You get all these new. It's not overwhelming. the way it feels like there's a lot of them, but it doesn't feel overwhelming. Like you're just getting, you know, 12.
Well, because he really, he takes time. You know what I mean? Like he takes time with these characters. He's not just like, look at how many we can cram into this one frame. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that's why I really dig it. So yeah, I'll definitely.
I think you would really like the second one. I think if you like this first one at all, based on what you're saying, the things you like about the first one, I think are amplified more in the second one.
Awesome. I'm in.
And I think that's often the case when a writer takes over a book, right? That first volume was like, all right, let me get my ideas started, right? And then I can play, right?
But in volume two, yeah, the pace does slow down. There's not these mega events every issue. It starts to kind of find its like, hey, we're gonna cruise for a little bit groove.
Well, yeah, because this one kind of ends with like, and we're back at the school and here's all our students and everything. I mean, not that like Beast getting beaten with a baseball bat wasn't a big situation, but
Beast getting beaten with a baseball bat.
Well, it happens with that big reveal, right? And no one knows that Xavier isn't himself.
Yeah.
And he's going to go see the Shi'ari and be in outer space. And
okay,
But they don't string that out over like a year of issues. It's like 8 pages and we're like, oh, they don't know. Like, oh, they know. Like in old comics, it would have been like a year of like Professor Xavier is possessed and they don't know.
I had that question of like, how long is that going to drag on? Because that's going to be annoying. Like, And then
everybody finds out in like 3 issues or something like that.
That's good because I would hate that just being like, as the reader knowing what's going on and everybody else is around is like, hey, professor, I'm like, no, don't you know? But okay, the professor, who is he meeting? They're acting like it's his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he's going to space with his girlfriend. And I'm like, yeah.
Josh, you want to take this one, Josh?
Aliens are a key part of X-Men stories, which is just bizarre because if X-Men weren't weird enough, they brought aliens in, right? So Scott Summers' dad is a space pirate. So Scott Summers' dad is a...
Starjammer.
Starjammer. He's a space pirate. Jean Grey becomes the Phoenix at one point, and there's battles.
About that because I saw the movie. Yeah,
that's right? Where there's a lot of the space stuff comes in.
Yeah,
is...
but there's... Oh. Yeah. Battles in outer space and trials about trying to test people's abilities.
And one way is a way to give X-Men technology that they weren't able to have.
Oh, okay.
But two, when the Phoenix is like a universal force, so they use the Phoenix to kind of broaden out the X-Men sphere. So now you have these other species in outer space who are concerned about the Phoenix force because it has destroyed their home world or there's some prophecy about it. So the Phoenix saga and the Dark Phoenix saga really bring in that celestial outer stuff. Yeah.
It's just the idea of like, how do you expand the universe? Cause you can't have, and I think the other part of it is like the X-Men are super powerful. So if they're not fighting giant Sentinel robots,
right,
who else do you give them to fight?
It's Marvel thrown in the multiverse. So like, plus, how do we bring all our dead characters back? And
you can't,
but that's honestly, that's kind of where you lose me. If you're throwing in aliens and stuff, I'm like,
what's Charles Xavier going to use? Hinge, Tinder, Bumble? No, he needs, like, he's not going
to
find
a suitable
companion. He's got to use like a weird intergalactic dating app.
So is it actually like, cause they're like,
you know, it's actually his girlfriend. It's actually,
oh my gosh.
I think it's his wife.
Is it his wife?
I think they got married at some point. Yeah. But I don't know how space marriages work. So I don't know how solid they are.
Cause Beast was making a lot of like Beast jokes, like his very like self-deprecating.
Best character. And made me like Beast. This book made me like Beast is always in the background, but now I'm like Beast. After reading this, one of my favorite X-Men now.
100%. loved this.
What did you think about this new Beast design, guys?
I loved it.
Cat Beast.
I thought it was fun, right? I would say like Beast has always been kind of this weird cross between, I mean, he's never, I like, if you go and look like really old X-Men, you're like, oh, he looks like a, like before he was blue and furry, he just looked like a big monkey man, right? Mm-hmm. And then like, oh, that's not weird enough. Let's make him blue and furry. And he's always, to me, been kind of feline-like.
Yeah.
But then they really lean into it this time, though. I like the cat litter. I like
yeah.
that.
They make him more of a teenager too. Like he's all horny and stuff.
Yeah.
I think he's like, I gotta get, you know, like he's a man with needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I loved it. He was fantastic in this, but all his humor and stuff. And he was talking about how he was going on a date and he was like, the professor's going on a date. I'm like, but is he actually going on a date? Does the professor like, get it with some ladies? I just, well, so yeah. Okay. So that clears that up.
Chasing space tail. That's what he's up to. Yeah.
So, these laser pointers.
Chiari girls are easy, you know?
Yes, that's right.
But dumb.
It's good following him.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap this up, we have, you know, we normally talk a little bit about art, but I think we've kind of dabbled into quietly and stuff like that. Andrea, I want to ask you, like, you don't read a lot of superhero comics. When we said, hey, we're going to read X-Men, is this what you expected it to look like?
No. And I am not a weird art kind of person, but for some reason, this really... I dug it. I don't know. It was inconsistent. I didn't realize it was two different illustrators.
It's not consistent.
So.
Even quietly himself is known for his inconsistency, even within his own work.
Yeah. I think it depends on when he's rushed and when he's not, right? Like, I think that's a very quietly thing.
Like, come on, quietly.
He's shh, quiet.
Shh, don't yell.
But I liked how weird it was. The gore, which I'm always someone looking for the gore in a story, was really, I mean, when Nova went, like her hand went through the dude's face and.
I was like, that's weird.
That's
gross looking.
The giant blobby mutant with all the parts sewn together. I mean, there were some really gross things in this and anything where they were just kind of being blown up and massacred and stuff, like, just looked really good. It didn't look like a big mess of things. There was very distinct parts drawn in. So I felt like while quietly takes this time, I feel like it's worth it. So even though it's weird, I felt like there was a lot more attention to detail than like most of the splattery gore. So I appreciated that.
It also helps it feel less exploitive too, because like we do, like in the cross, there is the costume, there is the boobs and stuff like that. But because it's not drawn in house style, it doesn't feel like mid-90s Lady Death stuff, you know? It's just you know, Jean Grey isn't, I mean, like the costumes, there's still some sexuality, there's still some, but just the lines aren't as curvy, they're not as, you know, it's not like here, look here.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
Okay, Travis, what was your big takeaway from the non-house, the quiet? You said before, early on, like, you didn't think it looked good when you were younger and you read it, but now you really enjoyed it. What's the thing that changed for you? That's all this podcast, man.
Honestly, you, like, we started this podcast, God, like 10 years ago, and I had a really hard time talking about comic book art. You know, different styles of like, and ultimately I still do. I don't have that eye myself, but now I just have seen so much style that I can roll with it and figure out what it's doing. And it's not a distraction. I find a way to incorporate it into the story itself on there. So Josh, I want to take this moment to thank you.
Oh, I made you read some really weird crap over the years, bud.
Yeah, God Hates Astronauts.
Oh, man. That's a one book we'll never drop. One book we'll never be able to get past. I thought the art, I enjoyed the art. It was good. It's different. It's weird. And I think that's the thing that I appreciate the most. I don't like the coloring, if I'm going to be honest. That's the one thing that kind of, if I had to complain about something, it's that early 2000s coloring. Where we're just figuring out how
to do digital
coloring. And sometimes it looks okay. And then other times it just doesn't. I think that's my biggest beef with it. Otherwise, like, I think quietly does some just bonkers, weird stuff, right? Like, you got Xavier with a giant piece of glass in his head and like, and then he pulls out a gun and shoots Cassandra Nova and like all of it. It's a weird book. Everything about it is weird. Like, there's no, the art is weird. The story is weird. And I'm in.
Did you like Zorn, Josh? Did you like Zorn?
Oh, can we talk about Zorn? There was one thing that was scratching an itch in the back of my brain. It was Zorn.
So, Andrea, welcome to what we call an annual. And so every year, normally comic books will do what's called an annual, and it's a single issue that can be part of continuity, part of the story, or it can be separate. Sometimes that annual is a collection of short stories about the character or about the X-Men. This one, for some reason, this annual was done landscape instead of portrait, and it was kind of a story that had anything to do with it, but also you'd never had to read it to get the rest of X-Men, right? Does that come back anywhere, Travis? Because it feels like
Zorn's a big part of this volume too.
Okay,
because he's a teacher.
Okay, but had you not read it, special and he just showed up?
He's the what?
He's the sped teacher.
Oh, okay.
There's sped students in the X-Men school. Okay, they don't. Hey, they take everyone. It's a public. It's a private school. It's public.
Public school.
Yeah.
They take every mutant.
And as teachers, you guys will love how they handle that.
but I think like that's a comic book device to sell comics, right? It's a brand new number one issue every year. So you're like, oh, there's only going to be one of these.
You got to jump on it.
Got to buy it.
You buy it.
I thought he was interesting. I thought the story was interesting. He really seems incredibly powerful. So I was like, oh, he's a bad guy. So apparently he's not a bad guy, which is
just misunderstood by the Chinese.
Just cool design. Yeah, yeah.
And a cool design, but I thought that he just kind of came out of left field, and I was like, "Well, who's the villain in this at this point?" But then
you get more of Zorn, and he's still around. In fact, in X-Men Utopia, there's been some stuff about him on there. I'm so glad X-Men '97 is good because it's reinvigorated. My little teenage self is coming out. I'm like, let's see some X-Men. But I'll tell you what, I've poked around in a couple different eras over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Not all of them are good.
No,
I can't imagine they would be.
I think that's the hard part is because X-Men is a weird place to find a place to jump on, right? I think this works because it's a new creator. Like, this creator is taking it over. He has a very distinct voice, and they're calling it new, and he gets to wipe the slate a little bit, not all the way. So
he's
it's a good place.
Threads from previous stuff, and then... Saying, but this necessary thing, but
yeah, it's a good place, I think, to jump on. And then the other book that we thought about having you read, Andrea, was the newest iteration of this process, right? Like, well, let's kind of redo the mutants. But what happened was there were two miniseries that happened at the same time, House of X and Power of X. And then they were two series that ran at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you could read those two volumes, and then it starts as X-Men.
Yeah.
But if you didn't read House of X or Power of X, just jumping into volume one of the X-Men run is what the hell is going on?
There's a lot of plants. Yeah. Do you like plants?
Yeah, you like plants, Andrea? Because there's a lot of plants.
I mean, I like plants.
There's a sentient island
I think I would say well, here's the thing, people, and this goes to everyone now in the world.
Yeah.
If X-Men 97 continues the way it's going for its run, we're going to be seeing a flush of X-Men in comics. We're going to be seeing one-offs. We're going to be seeing side issues. Yeah. We're going to be seeing all this stuff like that. If they keep hitting it as hard as they are, everyone's talking about it, we're going to start seeing a lot of X-Men. Andrea, I would say volume two on this is pretty good. And if you're still craving it, House of X, Powers of X, there is a little... You're going to feel lost going in there, but we felt lost going in there. It is.
That is another comic book writer.
Yeah.
He's a sci-fi writer who takes on the X-Men and treats it very he knows all the lore and all the stuff. And it's hard sci-fi.
Okay.
You get to that point, you call us up before you read it. We'll explain to you who Moira MacTaggert is, and then you can you can have at it.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, because I feel like this is a good thing to kind of pull me through the superhero comics. Yeah. This was like the best possible one to give me, I think.
Oh, good, good, good.
Especially because we just watched X-Men and everything.
I that was Josh. Part, Josh, right? Called like, that audible. Hook.
Yeah.
Wait, what's that?
Josh called that audible on there.
I was to read this one. So I was like, Travis and I both started reading the other one. We're like, oh no, this is going to be
so brutal. Don't torture her.
I was lost.
Yeah. So, all right. X-Men. Come to me, my X-Men. We've done it. We've talked about it. We've read it. Folks, thanks so much for tuning in. You can find the show over at comicexposure.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Andrea, thank you for coming on the show and reading the X-Men with us. I think that's it, Travis. I don't know what we're reading next. We're reading some book next.
We got to talk.
Something. We got to talk. All right. Folks, we'll see you next trade.